Hi, everyone. Welcome to American Truth Finders. I'm Neil Douglas, and I'm your host for the show. And as usual, we have another great show lined up for tonight. My guest tonight is Paul Sutliff. And tonight's show is Stealth Jihad Phase 2, Infiltrating American Colleges, Part 2. Now, if your friends are listening or not listening, I mean, give them a call and tell them to tune into bbsradio.com right now or americantruthfinders.com right now. This is going to be a very important show. Our number is 888-627-6008. That's again, 888-627-6008. And or you can go to americantruthfinders.com and you can listen to the show because it's going to take you right to BBS Radio. And Paul, I want to thank you, Paul Sutliff, for being on the air, and how are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
Thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to a fun evening.
Hey, I think we're going to have a great evening, and don't get excited if we don't get callers, Paul, because most people really like to hear what the guest has to say. I'm going to bring up the fact that not only do you have the book, Stealth Jihad Phase 2, Infiltrating American Colleges, and that's available on Amazon. But you've also got a book called Civilization Jihad and the Myth of Moderate Islam, also available at Amazon.com. Am I correct?
Yes. What you currently see is the self-published copy. The next one, pretty soon it's going to go into a nationally published volume, which will be available, I'm hoping, by Christmas.
Wow, that'd be great. And I advise everybody to get these books because I'm telling you right now, Paul is right on top of everything. And Paul, I'm not going to ask you too many questions unless I get to where I have to jump in and say, Paul, wait a minute. So bear with me. I'm really going to kind of turn the show over to you like I try to do with most of my guests. But in doing so, I have to start off with this quick question. And I hope you understand where I'm coming from. I'm sure you do. But for our audience that's listening, I have to ask you this question. What is going on with Yale?
Yale, it's amazing. If you look at what Yale has done, Yale has taken $10 million from an Abdallah S. Kamel in Saudi Arabia, a banker, to start a Sharia school, which Yale Law School refuses to call a Sharia school. However, the place is going to be called Islamic Law Center. Islamic law means Sharia. They're going to offer classes and training in Sharia. So it's a Sharia school. And at a leading university of the United States, where you would equate constitutional law now with Sharia law. This is a severe problem. Basically, it's taking barbarism law, things that say, with law that says things like you must commit acts of jihad. I'll get into that later. I'll read right from the law. So you can see how strange these things are. One of the things it does endorse, child marriage. It's a normal behavior under Sharia, and this will be equated with our constitutional law, and the two are incompatible. Of course, we arrest pedophilia here, and of course, in Saudi Arabia, it's endorsed. That's part of what we're talking about.
Let me interrupt you real quick on that question. If that happens, that it becomes part of our constitutional law, is that going to mean that the United States Constitution is going to, let's forget the Constitution, because it's going to become law instead of constitutional. Does that mean that this is going to become a country that endorses pedophilia?
There's a number of questions that go into that, and this is one of the things I've actually challenged the president of Yale to a debate on topics just like this. He has actually refused to debate me, because he'd have to answer some severe questions such as, yes, do you want to equate Sharia law with the Constitution? If not, why are you taking $10 million to put this school there? There's other questions. The banker, Abdallah S. Kamel, his father was identified by the FBI as an Al-Qaeda financer. His father's name is Salah Abdallah Kamau. He was identified as being on the Golden Chain as an Al-Qaeda financer. His bank was identified by the United Nations Security Council and by the United States Senate as a Hamas funder. So this makes Yale now susceptible to the Patriot Act, where they could actually take, the federal government could take over the over Yale's funds, because they are now working with and receiving funds from a person identified as having worked with terrorist financing. So Yale is susceptible to the Patriot Act right now.
So that could actually, are you saying that could close the school down?
I'm saying they could take over Yale's accounts. They could freeze them.
Well, that would be like closing them down.
It most likely won't happen because they have too many friends in politics. Yeah. Other than that, it won't. I mean, it should happen because that's the law. But it won't, and that's the sorry thing. They don't, because they have friends. That is the only reason it won't.
This is all unreal. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, Paul. And I know we're going to go into this a little deeper. I do want to ask you a real quick question, and then we'll go back to Yale again and what you're reporting on. Is this, do you have any knowledge that this, the jihadist situation in our colleges, is spreading throughout other colleges in the United States?
I have extensive knowledge that the Muslim Brotherhood has probably close to 700 groups on college campuses across all of North America. In most state schools, they have an organization called the Muslim Student Association. The Muslim Student Association will make statements saying they are not part of the Muslim Brotherhood. However, this was the first identified Muslim Brotherhood entity in the United States. And this is, you know, part of testimony that has been before Congress and part of testimony that has been in federal court that has identified this as such. So it's not just, you know, my word for it. It is federally identified truth.
This is just unreal. You know, I mean, when you think about it and how dangerous this has become, I mean, our country's become dangerous anyway with just the with ISIS, let alone what's going on with the universities that are promoting all of this.
I actually attempted to get colleges to identify that these groups are part of the Muslim Brotherhood. However, most of them refuse to do this. Well, let's say you have a student from the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, one of those three countries, three or four countries. If you have a student at your school that, let's say, is attending, we'll just pick on Yale. If that student gets involved in the Muslim Student Association, they may not be allowed to go home because that is an identified terrorist group. The Muslim Student Association is an identified terrorist group, because it is part of the Muslim Brotherhood, just as CARE has been identified as a Muslim Brotherhood entity. So these things are established outside of our country, but our present leadership in this country refuses to acknowledge, which is generally accepted fact.
What you're saying is our leadership is totally blindfolded with blinders on, and absolutely ignoring what's really the truth that is happening in this country.
There's no question. I mean, just to give you a clue as to how blind things are, and where I'm talking about the pedophilia aspect, there is a bath that women have to do in after having sex under Islam, and it's called the ghusl. But there's an exception. This is where I'm talking about the. We know that under Sharia, that pedophilia is a normal piece. Now, I'm just going to read you two sections of the law. Specifically, it's E10.3. Now, the exception to having to take the bath. Here we go. When a woman that has been made love to performs perfunctory bath, and the male sperm afterwards leaves her vagina, then she must repeat the ghusl if conditions. However, if she doesn't have this, here's the exception, that she is not a child, but rather old enough to have sexual gratification. What? Excuse me?
That's absolutely insane.
Yeah, and this is what we're getting at, and this is Islamic law. I've read it right from Reliance the Traveler, which I have in my hand right now, and this is a translation of the law into English. And you know, one of the fun things that gets said to non-Muslims all the time is you can't read Arabic, so you can't understand. However, close to 80% of Muslims cannot read Arabic. They read what's said in their own language. So, you know, when you go into a Muslim bookstore, go to the back of the room. Don't look at the front. Pick up the stuff in the back, which is written from Muslims to Muslims, because otherwise you're reading stuff where they lie to you and saying they're full of peace. They have a doctrine that encourages lying to non-Muslims. It's called taqiyya. And there's actually five more words that have to do with lying to non-Muslims about what Muslims believe. And that in itself is a scary thought. So we are teaching now in public schools that there is such a thing as five pillars. And I was just talking with a Muslim the other day. He says, yeah, but we don't ever teach about the sixth pillar. And he knew what I was talking about, the pillar of jihad. And that's the problem. We teach what the Muslims tell us they believe rather than what actual truth is, what they actually do believe, which is there are other pillars beyond the fifth pillar. And one of the sixth pillar has been identified as jihad.
Now, is there any the other five pillars? I mean, is there any definite threat in those five pillars?
No, there's no threat. I mean, we're talking about, you know, in the five pillars, we basically say, you know, just me get the exact quote here. I don't want to misstate anything. Get the exact piece here. Okay, so the first of the five, I want to read where I get this quote from, is from Al-Sarasqi. He's an 11th century Hanafi law imam, which is you know, it's the law of some Muslims. And here we go. He identified what was called the rights of Allah, which is still taught today. The first right of Allah is called the right of pure worship, and this is right from the book, right from his writings. The right of pure worship. The first of these is the belief in Allah or Iman, which the Arabic word is shahada. The second is prayer, salat. The third is zakat, which has to do with your giving. The fourth is fasting. The fifth is Hajj, the pilgrimage. And the sixth is jihad, which is holy war. So this is just one statement. It's been it's just an open acknowledgement that there is more than five pillars of Islam. However, we get told, well, Islam means peace, and just a little bit of knowledge to go beyond that. I love to get into debates with Muslims. It's fun, especially when you get one who's supposed to be an authority figure. So I'm out one day, asked to go visit where Dr. Muhammad Shafiq of Nazareth College is speaking. And I wait till he's done. Most of his questions have been asked, so I ask him, Dr. Shafiq, can you tell everybody what Islam means? And he says, peace. So I turn around and I say, Dr. Shafiq, can you tell everybody what it means in Arabic? Submission? Oh, so, wait a minute. If I don't submit to you, you're going to kill me? Wait a minute. So you lied to us before. No, he insists he didn't lie. Okay. So if I don't submit, what does that mean? And this is where it gets into the practice of taqiyya again. He's going to lie to us, and we have to expect that from Muslims. And we can't expect them to tell us the truth because this is part of what they're taught to do.
Now, can I ask you something about this? When you talk about Muslims, Paul, do you believe that all Muslims are following the Muslim faith and the teachings, and even going into the jihad issue, like we hear so much about?
It's actually an easier question to look at from this perspective. How many Catholics in America do you think actually know what Catholicism is all about? And I would probably say 10%. Most Catholics in the United States do not know what Catholicism really teaches. Why? Because, first of all, these people read. And most Catholicism, you know, for it to grow, a lot of reading was not required. And if you go to most Catholic countries, illiteracy is a higher rate than where it is in Protestant countries. And there's reasons for that. So just going back to that aspect, if you're not a practicing Catholic, you probably don't know what Catholicism really teaches. So looking at this from this perspective, Muslims are taught they are Muslim if they are of a their father is Muslim. That's all that's required to be Muslim. Now, for Catholic, it's pretty much the same thing. You grew up in a family that's Catholic, so you're Catholic. It's a little bit different for Christians. Christians have to make a decision for Christ, and that makes them a Christian. So it's a huge difference. So this is where we get into the differences in belief structures. Most Muslims understand that jihad is part of their belief structure? And I would say in America, the Muslims who have come here from another country, yes, they do know. The Muslims who are born here and maybe do not practice or never went to the mosque with their parents, it's possible they don't know. The second generation, it's possible. The third generation, it's really possible that they don't know. It's the amount of times when they're going to the mosque, they're going to be hearing things. Like they go to Friday prayers, Juma prayers. They're going to be told things over and over again about praying so that Islam is made victorious over all other religions. That's a regular Friday prayer that happens in every mosque in North America. And Tariq Fatah, I have to thank him. Now, here's a man who calls himself a Muslim. I really don't, from my understanding of Islam, I don't see him as being a Muslim because he is telling the truth too much. If there's any one Muslim I respect, it would be him.
Now, let me jump in for just a quick second. So in essence, what you're really saying is it's kind of like Catholicism, even Christians that belong to a certain faith or religion, like, you know, your Baptist, Methodist, etc., Episcopalian, whatever it might be, might claim themselves to be that, but really don't know what they're really claiming.
I think if you serve a God and you don't get to know him, that God has got to be pretty small, and you don't have much desire to know who your God is. And that's a pretty sad statement to begin with. I'd rather know the guy. I serve a living God, so I like the fact that he wants to know me and I get to know him through a book that he created called the Bible. So I think that's pretty cool. However, the difference is huge. Like I say, in Christianity, you have to make a decision for Christ. For those people who come from Catholicism, you don't make a choice. You're born into it. And those people who come from Islam, you don't make a choice. You're born into it. You can, if you're not a Muslim, you're open to becoming a Muslim if you want to convert. That's the only time you make a choice. Otherwise, you are born into becoming a Muslim. They talk about the increase of that Muslims are growing by great leaps and bounds. In America, the only reason Islam has increased and there's more mosques is because our current president keeps bringing more Muslims in than any other religion into this country.
What does that say about the president then?
Well, our current president is Muslim. He has openly identified himself as a Muslim repeatedly. And I say this, when he talks to other Muslims, he uses the personal pronouns when he refers to Islam. Now, I've actually got an article on that on paulsutliff.blogspot.com. If you look for my article on Obama and his personal use of personal pronouns, you'll find that there. It's an amazing thing. Personal pronouns. Would a Christian ever say these three words together? My Muslim faith. Now, this is something the current president said before he got elected the first time. Personal pronouns don't get used as mistakes. It's something you claim. It's just ridiculous that anybody would think differently. What he's done, let's take a look at the Syrian crisis coming, the quote crisis, the Syrian refugee crisis that they're calling a crisis. It is not a crisis. The current refugees who are being brought here, our FBI director says, we can't know who these people are. We can't know if they're actually Syrian or if they are from Afghanistan or if they are from wherever. We can't know. This is from the director of the FBI. So this is a major concern. He just testified on this past week. So why bring some people here? Yes, I'm sorry.
No, that's right. I'm just going to say, so anybody that we're bringing in as a refugee.
As a Syrian refugee, yes.
Right. Could be a terrorist that is out to behead whoever they want to behead.
Islamic State has stated that they have infiltrated the Syrian refugee, the whole entire Syrian refugee movement. So they are claiming to have their fighters amongst the, quote, Syrian refugees. Now, here's the other thing about the Syrians refugee movement. In Europe, they have identified that only 10%, I think it was 20% of those claiming to be Syrian are actually Syrian. This is something they've identified in Europe. It's been identified on the BBC and a few other reliable sources. One of the reasons they've been able to do this is because they actually proved through their own purchases that they were able to buy Syrian passports for their own employees at the BBC and the Daily Telegraph, or a few other places have tried to do this. And it's a simple matter of paying X amount of dollars and you can get your own Syrian passport, basically good for nothing. You know, it's interesting to see what is actually happening now that now I started listening to this aspect of the civilization jihad movement. Again, this is civilization jihad is not my terminology. It is the Muslim Brotherhood's terminology. And this goes to what's actually happening. We talk about the migration, we call it a refugee problem. What it actually is in Islam, they call it al-hijra, which is a migration. In Islam started, according to Islam, started not when Muhammad started having his own illustrious dreams, visions, or seizures, depending on how you look at it. Islam actually starts when Muhammad moves from Mecca to Medina. What does that mean? This is when Islam becomes a political entity. So this is why I don't even consider Islam a religion. I consider it a political entity, looking at how they credit their beginning is, the beginning of their political entity. So civilization jihad has to do with taking over non-Muslim countries. It has to do with taking over places like the United States, Europe. Take a look at England. What has happened? More Muslims come in. They demanded Sharia law be implemented in certain areas. They now have Sharia no-go zones where police are afraid to enter. This is beginning to happen here in the United States.
Paul, let me stop you right there. What? Okay, since Obama is destroying this country, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind, and I don't give a damn who knows it. Or who thinks otherwise? Who's listening to my show, or what's going on? When this, with him allowing this to happen, and our supposedly voted representatives are not doing a damn thing to stop it. When Obama, if he is actually ever gets out of office, and I say if because you never know what he might pull. My question is, if this is a takeover of the United States, where is he going to go?
I believe our president has the mental illness where he thinks so much of himself that he can't leave mirrors alone. He's got what's called NPD, narcissistic personality disorder. And because he's got NPD and he's Muslim, he believes himself to be the Messiah to the Muslim people. So he's trying to create a war. I originally thought he was trying to create a war or to unite all of Islam. And that's one of the prophecies that's actually in there, where, you know, you'll find the Shiites fighting the Sunnis, and all of a sudden then they all unite as one faith. And then they slaughter everybody else when that's done. And this is where I think our current president sees himself as that Messiah. Because according to, you know, people who are narcissists can see nothing less of themselves than the being the best and the brightest. And I still see that as what he really believes. Our current president, POTUS, has stated things like on his website in a response to our petition over a year ago. So 2 years ago, we brought a petition to ask that the Muslim Brotherhood be declared a terrorist group. His response was, "We have not seen credible evidence that the Muslim Brotherhood has renounced their decades-long commitment to nonviolence." One of the chapters in my new book has to do with the violent history of this moderate group. And everybody will know how violent they are when I say this one word, Hamas. Hamas is a chapter. It's just a chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood. So has anybody heard of Hamas being nonviolent? Still haven't seen that one. I think when you started rockets raining in your backyard, that's not violent. That's not nonviolent.
You're absolutely right. Is not the Muslim Brotherhood in the White House right now?
This is another good aspect to ask, because the Rose Al Yusuf paper from Egypt, when Egypt had just kicked out, their president, Sisi, and Sisi took over, they wrote an article that said that President Obama was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. They said they had his papers from his membership when he joined in Indonesia. They do recruit children, so this is entirely possible. So they were exposing this. All of a sudden, you know, things got cooled down, and, you know, quieted down over there. A little bit of influence being president of the United States, I guess, you know, can still influence things over in Egypt. And this is what happened. We're talking about a president who wanted to give our top-grade military weapons to the Muslim Brotherhood when they were in charge in Egypt, and didn't want to give anything to the people who threw out the Muslim Brotherhood. And there's a lot more that goes involved in that. This president has secret meetings with the Muslim Brotherhood. It's been published several times throughout the past years. My book actually documents the White House visitor logs, how certain people visit the president or various entities within the White House on a regular basis. Just looking at the White House visitor logs is pretty simple. Another interesting part in there is who exactly works in the White House. I like to look at a young lady named Asma Mirza. Asma Mirza is the daughter of Yaakov Mirza, who was the head of the Islamic Society of North America at one point. Yaakov Mirza also works with the International Institute of Islamic Thought and has various interests all over the Muslim Brotherhood entities in the United States. Now his daughter, Asma, she gets a position at the age of 26 on what we would call a board of directors or board of trustees for ISNA. They call it the Shura Council. So at the age of 26, she is suddenly a genius, and she gets on the Shura Council. Interesting thing that happened there. Asma Mirza also started at the age of 26 to work in the White House.
This is unreal.
Yes, this is the extent of the infiltration. Asma Mirza, interestingly though, her salary never appears. I have looked for a long time since she's been there. Her salary never is posted. However, the president has memos saying, if you have questions about your budget, refer to Asma Mirza.
She works in the Office of Management and Budget. She actually has her name posted on a White House site as working in the Office of Management and Budget. But no one can see her salary. What is it, secret? That's not even legal. It's supposed to be posted.
Well, who even knows about her?
And this is the scary stuff. I am just an average citizen, and yet I'm using sources that are free and available to all of us. I file Freedom of Information Acts with the government to get some sources that I don't have readily available to me. Here's an interesting point. I filed one with the Navy to say, how many interactions have you had with CARE? I would love to know what interactions you have with CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. The Navy called me one day and they said, we can't fulfill your request because it's too broad. I said, excuse me, please understand, the Council on American Islamic Relations, there was a war. I'm asking about the Council on American Islamic Relations because there was a warning given to congressmen and to senators not to interact with this organization because they have been identified, been directly involved with Hamas funding. And as an entity, they have been looked at as an actual entity of the Muslim Brotherhood Hamas in the United States. For those who actually look into this field and look at what CARE is actually Hamas in the United States. And that's actually, you can document that. You can document the Islamic Association of Palestine and how they've given money and they've been sued and they've lost. They lost millions of dollars because of this.
Paul, before we go any further, because we're about close to about the halfway through the show, I want you to give your blog site again, because this is what you're telling me right now, other people need to know, and I'm going to post it on my website as well. Because look, this is crazy. Because my next question after you tell them that is going to be, is there any stopping of this idiotic, chaotic thing that's going on with the Islam and the infiltration of the United States?
Well, I say go to Paul Sutliff, PaulSutliff.blogspot.com, and you can read through. My last few pieces have been in Yale. I have one more big piece coming on Yale. I'm trying to get in a legal magazine, and we'll see where that goes. The only way we can actually do anything is we have to start with declaring the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist entity. Until we do that, we are forbidden, and our hands are pretty much tied and kept, and we are denied from actually taking viable actions that could save America. That is the one thing that actually must be done. I would say done yesterday, in order for Americans to be safe. That would require closing of about 80% of American mosques, because they're owned by the Muslim Brotherhood.
That's never going to happen because everything that happens right now is a slap in the face to the Muslims, including our national anthem, including Christmas now, including whatever. It doesn't matter, even a Jewish holiday. Now get this. If two Muslim truck drivers can sue and get paid because they didn't have their holiday off, and yet anybody of any other religion, whether they're Jewish, Christian, or whatever, Catholic, I don't care what it is. Well, they don't get paid for their days off, and they can't sue.
The funny thing about that is that the truth of the matter, that was about a Muslim man refusing to deliver beer. And that was what it was all about. Well, if you can't do the job, don't take the job. If the job requires you to make a delivery of beer, and that's against your belief structure of whatever you want to say it is, then you should not be holding that particular job. To say that you can do the job and not be able to do the job at the same time, that's a problem. The person should be fired for not being able to do the job.
That's with anybody.
Yes. I personally, I don't believe that I'm not against drinking. However, I don't like the idea of drinking to get drunk. Am I going to get a job personally to stock somebody with tons of alcohol? I probably would not. But again, this is the purpose of this person taking this job was none other than to sue them. And this is pretty much what they're doing all over the United States. They're getting jobs, like they're putting Muslims in police jobs. And then they want the women to be able to wear the hijab or the niqab. They want them to wear the whole burqa. It's right. Hilarious. And again, these are planned infiltrations of our society to change the way we live.
Let me jump in. And I know I promised you I was not going to keep asking you questions. I was going to let you take over. But doggone it, you're bringing up some things that are just dynamic. I'm going to ask you something. Is there a damn politician out there that's running or is in office right now that even is going to attempt to put a stop to this movement?
I thought at one point Ben Carson was on track towards doing that. He did a little bit of backpedaling, so I'm kind of concerned about that. I have tweeted out, earn my vote to each one of the presidential candidates. Say you will declare the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist entity. It's all they have to do. If one presidential candidate will make that statement, then we will be safer. Actually, Donald Trump has come the closest to saying it. So I'm not going to put my faith in socialism or communism. So Hillary and Bernie are out. However, Carson, like I said, out of all of them, I believe that if Pataki was a higher candidate, higher level candidate, he would actually do it. I've actually talked with Pataki. I believe he would do it. And I say that also because having been governor of New York State when we were attacked, he was privy to some information that reveals how dangerous these people really are. So I don't have a question in my mind whether he would do that.
You know, this is the reason I brought that up, Paul, because, you know, the election is a year away. And yet everybody's campaigning so hard and people are tired of listening to politicians because they do nothing but promise you, and then they lie like through their teeth, and then you wonder those like Carly and Don Trump and Donald Trump and Ben Carson, you know, as much as they are saying what the people want to say but don't have the voice to say it, are they going to change when they get in office? Are they going to get bought off? Are they going to get threatened? Are they going to get to the point where, or are they going to become puppets?
I met Carly at last CPAC. I'm going back this year. And I had thought, well, she's an interesting woman. I actually bought her book. I actually got to meet her and talk with her, you know, shake her hand privately. I thought she was going to be somebody to watch. And to me, she's been a disappointment. It's sad to say because she's done too much backpedaling. She was starting to surround herself with really good people. People that could have advised her well, and I don't know where she went from that. She must have strayed from that because there were certain people I saw her surrounding herself with. I was thinking, well, you know, she could be a good candidate. So I'm not the kind of guy that just goes out and says, well, you're not a male, you can't be president, or you're not this particular color. My actual favorite person to run this country is not running, and that would be Alan West.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you what, this guy is
the only man I would like to run.
Why is he not running? Is what I keep asking myself. When you listen to Alan West, I mean, it makes you question, why is he not running for president?
I think Alan is a very wise man and realizes what the position of president may cause his family to sacrifice or him to sacrifice. He may not want people looking into his life that closely, but I'll tell you, out of all the people I see that are running, I still think he would be the best candidate. You'll see people like Donald Trump and Ben Carson and other people who are running on the Republican ticket still mentioning that Alan West would be a member of their cabinet, that they're they're actually thinking about that. I wouldn't have in a doubt in my mind if I was if that Donald Trump may actually think about having him as a vice president. Not saying that that's there, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I thought maybe that, you know, if Donald, if here's my concern about the RNC in this case is, are they really going to allow Donald Trump to become the candidate?
My thought was Donald was not originally going to run as a candidate through the whole procedure. I still kind of expect him to drop out the last
minute. I do too. I do too.
My prediction was that he was not a Republican, and that I don't know if he's actually registered yet as a Republican, because I still think he's registered independent. I have to go back and check that, but I'd heard that he could not run in 37 states as a Republican because I think he was still registered independent.
And he also was registered at one time as a Democrat.
Yes. He's made several statements that are against, pretty much against what the GOP believes. And I say pretty much, however, he functions as a Republican in his businesses. So he may have been, you know, giving appearances to show one thing or another for business purposes. I do not know how to explain it other than that.
Well, you know, actually, when you think about it, Paul, just because somebody's a Democrat or thinks, you know, maybe independent and could be somewhat liberal or somewhat liberal and then also somewhat conservative, kind of in the middle as an independent, doesn't mean they're bad. They're not all Democrats are bad, for crying out loud. And just like not all Republicans are good, for those that are
definitely.
You
look at Boehner. Boehner's an example. Boehner's an example.
Oh my gosh, he is a rhino.
I'll tell you one thing. I was a member of a church called the Assemblies of God, and the Assemblies of God require their pastors to sign a doctrinal statement every year. In order to continue your position as this job, you have to subscribe to these beliefs, and it's pretty simple. You sign on the bottom line, send it back in. Well, I think every candidate who is a Republican candidate ought to have to sign, I believe these things and I will endorse these things. I think that should be a requirement. If you can't endorse those things, and this is the thing the GOP should do, if you do not endorse these things, we will take that position from you. And that means I don't care if you're the president of the GOP or a member of the GOP in any facet. If you do not subscribe or actively or vote against these things, you have no right to be called or a member, much less a candidate. And then to actually be an office holder and to go against that, that's where I have issues. And I'll say this for the Democrats. They've stuck together better because they're all socialists.
They all have stuck together. And, you know, and the idea that they're socialist, you know, is because of the fact that they don't understand socialism except for a handful of them.
I'd say Hillary and Obama understand it perfectly, and everybody fears that they told the truth about it.
Yeah, but they're not the majority of the people either. You know, but you're right. I mean, what I'm saying is the average person who thinks that – because when they say, boy, we really like what Sanders is talking about, well, they do.
That's scary.
Well, yes, because they know they're going to get the handout. I mean, I use that term very loosely because there's conservative Republicans or whatever that are getting the same handouts. My point being is, and we've kind of got off topic, but I didn't mean to do that to
you. That's okay.
But the point I'm getting at is something has to happen fast. I mean, really fast, because this country is doomed if we have a failing election that puts a failing politician or non-politician in the office of presidency, unless he surrounds himself with excellent, honest American people that want to save this country, we're doomed.
Going back to that same vein, putting the right people in office, there are about 10 Iranians working in the White House. And I say Iranians, I'm saying they are at least of Iranian heritage, who actually claim this publicly that I can trace.
Valerie Jarrett?
Among others. I have a list, and I can't access that at this point. It's on a different computer than I have home right now. And it's easily identifiable things. And I mean, the people vote in. Sorry, you can look at the White House staff logs, and it's easy to compare the staff logs versus the Iranian. You can look at the Iranian names. It's easily identifiable stuff. So this is publicly available information. We have 10 Iranians in the White House. So let's think about this. If it was 1979, what would have happened to any one of those Iranians in the White House? They would have been arrested for treason immediately and removed from office. They would be considered a security threat. Most likely, if not arrested for treason, they would have been removed at the very least as a security threat. Please explain to me how having Iranians of even, I'm not saying that they are born in Iran, I'm saying even of American Iranians working in the White House during a time when we are, you know, talking about having difficulty with Iran. This is very controversial. Again, well, Valerie Jarrett was born there.
Yes. look,
scary.
The difficulty with Iran is Obama and his cabinet and his and all the cronies that voted for it gave them $1.5 billion, and they're our enemy.
I believe it was 15. Excuse me, I think it's 15 billion.
Well, okay.
And the amount of money has to do with the funds that we have frozen that are theirs. Now, it's their assets that were frozen that are here.
Is that money?
We should not be giving them any of this money back. What are they? What is the plan for them to use this money for? It is actually to continue to fund Hezbollah, which they own. We have several Iranian governmental parts of government, even Hezbollah, an identified terrorist entity by the United States, the Iranian. All these different parts that we have identified of the Iranian government as terrorist entities, yet this current president wants to give them billions of dollars. This is insane. It's treason.
It is treason. It is damned outright treason, and there's not a damn thing that our elected officials are doing to stop it.
In the United States, we have FEMA. FEMA is actually funding CARE.
Oh, I know.
Okay. This is one of the articles you'll find on my site. It's easily traceable. I had heard that FEMA that the federal government was funding CARE in some way. So I started to look things up, and it wasn't just CARE. There's other entities that work for the Muslim Brotherhood and other entities that have funded Al-Qaeda that are receiving funds from the federal government. Easily identifiable by public information that's available to all of us. I recommend one site that everybody should look at. It is usaspending.gov. usaspending.gov has so much information on it available to everybody. You can type in, when you get there, type in the word Muslim or type in is Islamic, and the amount of information you'll see from the State Department going out. Here's another one FOIA I filed. It's going to cost me about $500. I asked for any and all, a list of any and all entities that are Islamic that the U.S. State Department currently funds. I was asked to actually limit my scope. I says, well, wait a minute. I says, if I asked for Christian stuff, you would probably be done in 5 minutes. So why is this such an extensive thing? I says, I'm asking, you know, they want me to define Islamic. I says, okay, the State Department defines Islamic as an organization run by Muslims. That's how the State Department fund describes it. So I want to go by your description. Well, this is going to cost an awful lot of money. I says, I'm willing to pay up to $500 for this. Okay, that might cover it. Now, well, here's the catch. I won't get the information until 2017.
I was going to say, when is the timeline you're going to get to it? You just answered that question. Paul, we're getting close to being short of time, but I do want to do this. because we did get away from the Yale situation. Is this going to blow the lid off of Yale?
My next article, if I get to publish it in the particular place I'm trying to, will basically tell Yale. It will make an accusation against Yale that there is no way that they could deny that they knew that Abdallah Saleh Kamel works for an organization, the Dala al-Baraka Group, that actually owns banks that have funded Hamas. There's so many things. Let me just read off four of them. I talked about the Hamas group. Here's another one. Dala al-Baraka banking conglomerate for contributing to BMI, a confirmed al-Qaeda financer. Okay. Dar al-Ma'al Islami Trust. Saleh, his father, was listed as a major investor amidst a proven string of bin Laden support by DMI. This is written in the New York Times in 2008. His father was also listed, I keep talking about this, golden chain in Al-Qaeda finance list. The reason he was named in the lawsuit by the 9/11 victims' families was because of this. The reason why he was released is because of jurisdiction. He lives in Saudi Arabia. How are you going to sue somebody who lives in Saudi Arabia? This is the United States. We don't have any jurisdiction over that. So that's how several bankers, Saudis, were released from any charges because they're not living in the United States. I say take every last bit of their property here. That's how you can take advantage of it, but they just release them because of lack of personal jurisdiction.
Well, I tell you what, because we are getting close to time here, I got to tell you, Paul, I do want to be able to put your blogs on my website with your permission. And
all I ask is you send me an email currently. Just send me an email to give me the listing where you're putting it. And every once in a while, let me know how many hits you get. That just makes me feel better.
Well, yeah, that's no problem with that. Yeah. And anyway, also, I want to remind our listeners that our podcast will be available by probably Tuesdays during the day sometime, not only on American Truth Finders and BBSRadio.com, but also on iTunes. If you go to iTunes, you'll find that BBS Radio has all of American Truth Finder shows there. So this is important. And I have to tell you quite honestly, ladies and gentlemen, these shows are way too important for you to miss. And Paul, I want to thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Well, thank you. It's been enjoyable.
And when we go off the air, I want you to hang on for just a minute, if you will. And I think we're about to go off pretty quick. As far as I know, I'm not positive, but I think so. I'm looking at my time anyway. So in the meantime, in 2 weeks, on the 15th, Ilana Freeland and Billy Hayes is going to return. And we're going to do the part three of the ionized atmosphere and the Space Fence Future. That's part three. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Neil Douglas. Paul,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great week. Have a safe week. Be careful. Stay out of trouble. And stay tuned for whatever's next right now, because I got to be honest, I don't know right off the top of my head. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, have a great week, or a great 2 weeks until we talk to you on the 15th. And Don, if you're listening, I know you are, you're the engineer, you can take me out or kick me off, whatever you're doing.